So clearly a kind of worry about German military threat and the possible relationship between that and German musical dominance.
Can we define the difference in flavour between symbolist French and decadent British Wagnerism?
One of the things that differentiates a symbolist Wagnerism from what we might call the decadent Wagnerism of the slightly later British writers and artists is that the symbolist response to Wagner was expressed in ways that were seen as purely aesthetic, and it was very much located within one particular journal, the Revue Wagnerienne, and very much interested in some of the formal innovations of Wagner's music and the way in which the very rich metaphors and imagery of Wagner's works could be exploited to develop various styles of writing, whereas the decadents in Britain were great admirers of the French symbolists. But decadence always had a more ambiguous status in Britain. It was both something that was an artistic movement, but it also had all sorts of social and medical connotations, most usually negative ones, the kind of Simmons famous statement that decadence was a new and interesting disease. So although the decadence drew on a lot of the formal aesthetic innovations of the symbolists, they were seen as a social or commercial phenomenon as well as an aesthetic phenomenon.
And we're talking about sexuality. Presumably that must come up.
It seems to me that that association of Wagner's music particularly, but high romantic, highly affective music with sexual experience and particularly with homosexuality, that is one of the formative influences in the history of Wagnerism in the late 19th century and particularly in the aftermath of Oscar Wilde's trials for homosexual offences, because just immediately before his trials, there had been a number of works published in Britain and in Germany in which the Bayreuth Festival was identified as a homosexual rendezvous. There were questionnaires published by German sexologists which asked, are you particularly fond of Wagner's music? And this was intended to allow the readers to identify themselves as Uranians. And I think it's suggestive that Dorian Gray, the protagonist of Wilde's novel, is a passionate Wagnerite and that his relationships with the other male characters unfold to a musical background. They meet at the opera, they describe Tannhäuser as the sort of unfolding of the character of their own souls.
So being a Wagnerite was being a friend of Dorothy.
Yeah, and you see it in clusters of references, you know, to Wagner's work, to the work of Walt Whitman. These kind of clusters of codes come up again and again, and these could be read as pretty clear indications of sexual inclination.
We can see the way Wagner permeated modes of thinking, writing, painting, drawing at the time of Shaw and Beardsley, both as a result of the work coming out of Bayreuth itself and also through the impact of the French symbolists. But how did he affect musical life in Britain, a country famously defined as das Land ohne Musik, the land without music?
I think that phrase, das Land ohne Musik, has got a broad truth. But I think as far as thinking about a musical tradition in terms of great works and magnum opi and composers who one could identify as composing a lineage of British music, I think in all those senses there was a lot of tentativeness and uncertainty about the value of British writing and of British music. And that's one of the reasons why Wagner was embraced so wholeheartedly by large swathes of the British public, because the idea of a common Northern European culture meant eminent German composers, including Wagner, could be claimed as part of a tradition of British writing.
I think it was a country that was constantly judging itself against Germany. So if you wanted to be a composer, you had to go to Leipzig. You couldn't study in England. There weren't the institutions, really, at that time.
But there was a serious English musical renaissance at around this time. Who were the big composers responding to Wagner, the central creative protagonists of Wagnerism in Britain?
You have five big names who are uber British Wagnerians, really. There's Elgar, Ruttel and Boughton, Granville Bantock, Gustav Holst, and Frederick Delius. Elgar, he just loved Wagner and listened to Wagner, went to Bayreuth. But if you think of something like The Dream of Gerontius, now that opens in a very similar way to Parsifal. It's an unaccompanied line, and it's orchestrated in almost the same way. It's clarinets and bassoons, and violas underneath. And I always think that Elgar knew that this was what Wagner did. So I think he knew that that was a style he was trying to achieve. You could look at the Pomp and Circumstance marches as Elgar's equivalent of Wagner's Kaisermarsch. There are lots of ironies. The most interesting one is for the Enigma variations, and the famous one, the Nimrod, is a portrait of his editor, August Jaeger, and Jaeger was a German. And it's always struck me as hugely ironic that we roll out Nimrod on Remembrance Sunday and say, oh, how wonderful, how British. This is the most German thing you can actually think of.
Was Elgar recognised in Europe?
Oh, yes. And he was very proud that Richard Strauss, who was known as Richard II because he was following in Wagner's footsteps, said that he was the first British progressive musician and called him Meister Elgar. Well, that pleased Elgar no end. So Elgar's the most famous example now. But probably more famous in his lifetime was Bantok, and he was an example of Edwardian giganticism in his orchestration, which comes directly from Wagner. Something like the Omar Khayyam, this huge choral epic in which he's trying to paint with music narratively in a very Wagnerian way. And he also has extravagances that Wagner had. There's a lovely piece towards the end of Bantok's life, which is called the Celtic Symphony, which has six harps in it. They don't come until the very end of the piece, really. And there's loads of fantastic glissandos, and you're washed away in this fantastic sound. It's so Wagnerian, because at the end of Rheingold, Wagner similarly asks for six harps.
Good music?
Well, I think it's probably not as profound as Wagner. It's music of gesture. It's actually very like film music. There's a Rutland Boughton, who, I suppose, in material terms, managed to achieve the Wagnerian ideal more than any other composer. And Shaw was a great champion of Boughton. And what Boughton did was to try and create a festival along the lines of Bayreuth in Glastonbury, in the assembly rooms at Glastonbury. And I've been, they're tiny. There's no stage, there's no wings, there's nothing. They did it all on a sort of set-up stage with a piano. And he got Ethel Smith, Elgar, they all went down there to see these productions, most famously of The Immortal Hour. And Shaw, in The Perfect Wagnerite, says he's managed to do in Somerset what Wagner's done in Thuringia, with the very material difference that Wagner had the King of Bavaria at his back, and Mr. Boughton raised money with jumble sales, got his wife to do the costumes. He was a communist. He tapped into this whole political ideal that Wagner was partly talking about in The Ring. And another socialist was Holst. Now, Holst dripped Wagner. You know, if Wagner was a liquid, where Holst went, there'd be puddles everywhere. He just soaked it all up when he was a young man. He'd come back from Wagner Nights at Covent Garden trembling with ecstatic excitement. And this was something that happened to virtually every composer, a lot of writers at that time. Wagner was so powerful, so overwhelming, that you were in danger of just losing your own identity. And this was a big problem for post-Wagnerian Europe. How can you improve on something that is so perfect? And so you have to find a new way forward.
If you had a serious interest in the arts, indeed in an intellectual life at this time, was it possible to escape Wagner? What if you didn't like him?
No. I don't think anyone can escape, actually, if only because declaring yourself uninterested in Wagner is as much a response to Wagner's cultural presence as is enthusiasm for Wagner. I think it's almost impossible to overstate his cultural presence in the late 19th century. You just had to find strategies for coping with his prestige and with all the innovations he'd introduced.
Wagner's music is a subject, as we well know, that kindles fierce emotions. His revolution still has a profound impact. I'll finish with another quote from Shaw. Unfortunately, human enlightenment does not progress by nicer and nicer adjustments, but by violent corrective reactions, which invariably send us clean over our saddle and would bring us to the ground on the other side if the next reaction did not send us back again with equally excessive zeal. Nicely put.
Simon Russell Beale was speaking to Emma Sutton and David Huckville in that 20 minutes, British Wagnerism. Act 3 of Goethe Dämmerung, the final act of this first Ring cycle ever presented in a single season at the Proms, coming up in just a few minutes. You know, this is an existential and emotional progress for us listeners, but just imagine what it's like then for the musicians, the players of the Staatskapelle Berlin, who've been bringing this epic universe of music and drama and myth to life over the past week. Well, no need to imagine, in fact, because I've got two of the players here with me now. Concertmaster Wolfram Brandl, violinist and cellist, principal cellist Claudius Popp. Claudius, Wolfram, thank you for being with me. Thank you for taking this time before the world ends in Act 3. How are you feeling at this stage of the journey? Has this been a big emotional experience for you, Wolfram?
Of course. Evidently, it was one of the most important projects we had over the last years, you can say. And to be at the Proms is a wonderful honor for us and a wonderful pleasure, and we feel very warm welcomed of the public. It's great to be here.
Claudius, I mean, this is the orchestra's first visit to the Proms, this ring cycle. I mean, people go on about the special atmosphere here. I mean, are you finding it a special place to play in for you?
It's absolutely astonishing. Absolutely astonishing. The audience is absolutely unspeakably taught. They know everything there is to know about Wagner. I've never experienced an audience which sits in the hall with the score, first of all. Secondly, they're immaculately quiet. It's unbelievable how completely silent they are for 5 hours standing. Never saw anything like it. The reaction after we're done playing is louder than we play, which is, you know, again, we play pretty loud, so you get a reference. And lastly, I mean, tonight is kind of a closure. Just like for the audience, just like for us, you know, we play our guts out, obviously, and the entire ring cycle comes to an end. And before last act, again, basically, you know, collect all your powers and give everything.
Is it a different experience for you? I mean, you're in that pit in the Staatsoper in Berlin most of the time. So here you are, I mean, watching you, and I'm sure this is shared by anyone who's been here over the week and everybody listening at home. I mean, you are creating the theatre here. I mean, all of your movements in the hall, and of course all the sounds you make, become the theatre of Wagner's music.
Yeah, but this is the wonderful thing to play the ring on stage, because sometimes it can be a little disturbing, all this regie stuff, you know, and
this is just directed
without any disturbing things. And on the other hand, we have the opportunity to get in contact with the public, so we get really in touch with them and we can feel immediately what they feel, and so there's a kind of interaction which is really wonderful and really great for us.
And what about the interaction with Daniel Barenboim? I mean, I've watched him throughout rehearsals and I get a pretty good view of him here. I mean, he's not easy on you when he sort of signaled to you guys in the first violins, Wolfram, when he was unhappy with something. I mean, there's an intensity that he's communicating with all the time as well. Is that, how important is that connection for you?
Well, don't forget about the difficulty for him visually, first of all, because usually we play in the pit. He sees the stage from right to left complete. All the singers sing into his face. Mm-hmm. Here, it's exactly the opposite. They're all the time in his back.
Yeah.
He can't see them. They can't see him really well. Obviously, they have little monitors, but that's it. Mm. So the contact is very limited. Therefore, it's a lot more challenging than it usually is.
You're going on holiday pretty well tomorrow. On behalf of everyone who's been here, thank you for doing this for us just before you go on holiday. Is this going to be then a kind of blood and guts performance of the third act? Leave everything on stage?
Of course, for sure.
As it has been the whole week. Wolfram, Claudius, thank you very much. Indeed.
Thank you very much.
Been a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Now, throughout the week, Georgia Mann has been hearing about the extraordinary experience that a group of Scottish prommers have been going on through their Wagnerian total immersion, or should that be total immolation tonight? And Georgia, I gather you found them again in the arena, so time for a spot of Celtic Twilight tonight. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Should I say thank you for that? I'm not sure, Tom. Yes, here I am, toe-to-toe with the prommers again on the arena floor, and I can tell you, Siegfried, Brunhilde and Wotan have nothing on these three. These three here, Al, Sean and Helen. We first met We first met on Tuesday when you were shedding items of clothing in the queue for Die Walküre. It's been emotional. You have done a ridiculous amount of queuing and standing, and you have never been deterred whatsoever. I know it's hard, but highlights so far, please.
It's impossible to pick a single thing. I'm sorry. It's the way the feeling builds up and builds up. All I can say, it was the last moment before we came off. It's delightful. It's appalling. It feels like love. No, no, there is one moment, and that's when Brunhilde was... realizes she's been betrayed, and they play Brunhilde's theme as woman, as being a human being.
So it was the bad moment for Brunhilde so far. That moment has been the highlight for you, Al, which I know. But then, Sean, how about you?
I think you get something different from it every time, and you know, it means something different to you, whatever's going on in your life, or maybe not. But for me, Tuesday was amazing. Die Walküre, I'd never really got it the way I got it on Tuesday. It just completely shone to me the whole night, and it's magical, yeah.
And for you, Helen, because this is your first ever opera experience, you decided to go in at the deep end with 15 plus hours of Wagner. How has it matched up? I mean, highlights, but also, is this what you expected it to be? Has it exceeded expectations?
Totally exceeded expectations, yeah. I didn't know opera or music could be like this. I'm a committed Wagner fan now with these guys. We're in it for the full run. Gosh, yeah, it's been fantastic. I think I've particularly enjoyed Brunhilde's journey. I think I'm always complaining there aren't enough like strong female characters.
You don't get much stronger than Brunhilde. Oh, okay. It is true. Now, Al and Sean, a little bird tells me, and it didn't surprise me that much, given some piercings and long hair, that you two are in fact rock and rollers. You are in a rock band, and people might not necessarily put Wagner alongside rock. Was he the original rock star? What are the overlaps there?
There are no overlaps. Wagner is infinitely, infinitely better than anything rock and roll can do. This is music tonight, what you hear. What we do is a sort of kind of performance. It's for dancing, it's for having fun, being drunk. This is for something much more exceptional. There aren't words for what this is, but there are for what we do.
You talked earlier, actually, Al, about the change in perspective that you get as you move through the ring cycle. I mean, now that we're reaching the twilight of your experience, how, you know, looking back on it, has this changed the way that even a super fan like you views Wagner, the music?
Yeah, every time. I believe the ring asks you a question at the end, when, with the destruction of the world and society, it looks at you with its arms open and says, what about you? What are you going to do? And you can't answer with love or freedom, because you've seen freedom is a brutish thing in Siegfried. Love is a complicated, awful thing in the relationships between the characters. You have to answer with something else. And I think the answer sometimes this time is the 16 hours you've been watching. What this man's done. And maybe we can't do that, but we're human beings and we're capable of so much. And I think that's a wonderful thing. I think that's what this time I learned. But we'll see when it happens.
We'll see. Well, there's still more to go. There's more to go. We're sort of stood in the very midst of people, where everybody's sort of rising now in the arena, making their way forward. How have you negotiated? How have you strategized the queuing proming experience? Because this was new to you, Helen and Sean. I mean, have you managed to master how to get yourself where you want to be?
No. It's just a big mess. You just have to kind of shuffle in and muscle about and, you know, stand on your tiptoes and just, yeah, make it.
There
work.
Is an etiquette, isn't there, Helen?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. You'll be in trouble if you, your bag's got to be in the right place.
And
you
I saw a towel on the floor earlier on and I wanted to make sure I didn't tread on it.
Yeah, that one's a new one.
But it's cool, though, because everyone's in it together, you know? That's the thing. You're not... You know, it's fine, because it's like a festival in the way it should be, you know, it's great.
And you have met in the queue, didn't you? You three, you two, Al and Sean, knew each other and are a rocking duo, but you, Helen, you met these two only in the queue here. Do you think you're going to keep in touch? Is this a friendship forged for life?
Of course, Tannhauser next weekend.
Tannhauser,
you're going to be back for that?
We'll be back for that, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. It really is. It's a beautiful thing that's happened this week, even outside of the amazing stuff that's happened on stage.
There you go. They just cannot keep away. Back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Georgia. And what Al, Sean and Helen were saying there, I mean, Al couldn't agree with you more. It's absolutely a beautiful phrase. It comes with the open arms. It's what, up to us what happens next. Too right. Well, we're going into the twilight of the gods then. Wagner's words at the end of Act 3 seem to be absolutely clear about the catastrophe of what happens, a festival of death and destruction, epitomised by the power of Brunhilde's climactic immolation scene. But the music is strangely positive, even serene, at the very end of Götterdämmerung. I asked Daniel Barenboim what he thought about this apparent dissonance between music and drama.
You can really interpret that in many, many, many different ways. But the music, funnily enough, does not end with a sense of catastrophe. After they all stopped singing and everything's finished, the very end comes again Sieglinde's motif, a motif of love, and in many ways it ends really very grandly and in a certain way almost peacefully. And therefore, the music, if the music is the key to it, and I think it is, I think the music does not really show a complete catastrophe. I think the music in a certain way says there are terrible catastrophes and look at this story and the gods and all this, all terrible. And yet here is the grandeur and the peaceful D-flat major chord.
Applause in the Royal Albert Hall for the players of the Staatskapelle Berlin coming on for the last time to play this final act of Wagner's Götterdämmerung. Well, things already look pretty bad for Siegfried, Brunhilde and the gods after the first two acts, but they're about to get a whole lot worse in the third apocalyptic, world-ending, but possibly also world-renewing act of Götterdämmerung and of Wagner's Ring Cycle. We start, that we always, with the Rhine Maidens lamenting the loss of their gold and singing to Siegfried that he should return the ring to them to avoid its curse. Alas, he doesn't listen to them. Mind you, does he listen to anyone? Siegfried has been separated from the rest of his hunting party, which includes Gunther and Hagen, and their prey isn't really a wild boar or two, but rather Siegfried himself. They all meet and rest. Hagen gives Siegfried another potion to help him tell his story. This magic drink restores Siegfried's memory, and he remembers Brunhilde. Hagen kills him, stabbing him in the back. The oath that Siegfried swore in the second act was false, so he had to die according to the law. Siegfried has time, though, to remember his kiss with Brunhilde just before his death, and then his funeral music. And this is the apotheosis of the darkness of Götterdämmerung's musical world. Wagner excavates new and awesome colours in Siegfried's funeral music and transfigures his orchestra. But that's only the end of Siegfried, not of the whole ring cycle. Siegfried's corpse is brought back to the Gibichung Hall. Hagen is blamed for Siegfried's death by Gunther, so he kills him, and Hagen then claims Siegfried's ring as his own. But the corpse raises its arm when Hagen tries to steal it, and he recoils in fear. And then Brunhilde arrives, and her immolation scene, the very end of Götterdämmerung, sees the ring at last returned to the Rhine, but only after the fire of her death has cleansed it of its curse. It sees Valhalla and its heroes up in flames, and has a crowd of people looking on in awe and wonder. And listening, too. Act 3 of Götterdämmerung, then, at the Royal Albert Hall. Daniel Barenboim conducts the Staatskapelle Berlin, and the singers will hear the Rhine Maidens, Aga Mikolai, Maria Gotsevskaya, and Anna Lapkovskaya. Andreas Scharger is Siegfried. Gert Grushovsky sings Gunther. Michael Petrenko is Hagen. Gutrune is played by Anna Samuil. And Nina Stemmer embodies and channels Brunhilde. We'll hear the voices of the Royal Opera Chorus as well. Philip Henscher was talking in the first interval tonight about the inexplicability of that dissonance between music and drama at the end, the inexplicability, really, of what we hear at the very end. And that's really because Wagner himself changed his mind. Originally, the ending for the whole Ring Cycle was going to be optimistic. Siegfried and Brunhilde were going to ascend into Valhalla. That pessimistic ending, some people say it's because he was reading Schopenhauer at the time. But what's extraordinary about what happens is exactly as Al was saying, exactly as Al, our promo, was saying, is it asks a question of us. It says, what are you going to do? The music is a positive and chaotic melee of all the motives that we've been hearing over the last 16 hours and the last week. And ultimately, it gives a positive message you feel, even though the image, the dramatic image, is total and utter destruction. Daniel Barenboim's connection with the orchestra that Wolfram Randall and Claudius Popp were talking about, it also extends to the singers. One thing that's astonishing about watching him at close range from here is that he really is physically conducting the solo singers as well, giving them their entrances and exits. Everyone, you feel, is in this together. But Barenboim somehow is able to command everything from the center of that podium there. And command also the listening of the Prommers and the listening of the Royal Albert Hall and indeed of everyone at home. I wonder what tonight's going to bring at the end of Goethe Demmerung, if the feeling is going to be of community and of possibility, of hope for the future, or whether we'll be left rather with that tremendous darkness that there is at the heart of the drama of the Twilight of the Gods. Daniel Barenboim has been conducting the Ring cycle with this orchestra for about 20 years, but his relationship with the Ring goes back to Bayreuth 25 years ago. The first time he conducted the Ring was at Bayreuth. But this performance, this set of performances, the final performances of the season of this orchestra, the Staatskapelle Berlin, mark really the summit of his lifelong relationship with Richard Wagner so far. He brings the players of the Staatskapelle Berlin to their feet. He said just another astonishing ovation from the Royal Albert Hall. Barenboim comes to the front of the stage. The players are all smiling. They're about to visit total death and destruction on the world of the gods. And quite a lot of the people in it too, but they're all smiling, about to give themselves, as Wolfram and Claudius said, to give leave everything on stage. The third act of Goethe Demmerung, the Staatskapelle Berlin and Daniel Barenboim.
zottige Gesellen, der mir verschwand. Ist euer Friedel, euch lustige Frauen, lass ich ihn gern.
Thank you. lass das sein. Trau dich kaum, eure Schmeicheln, euer Drohen schreckt mich noch auf Mittern.
Amen.
highest. Montella! Sagen Siegfried, der Vögel Sangessprache, verstündest du wohl, so wäre das wahr. Seit lange macht ich es lallend nicht mehr. Einst vernahmst du sie. singe, Kate. Wiebe dieser mürrische Zweig, des Neides Zwang zu mich auf, das einst dem Kind von Genes erwut, einen Wurm im Feld in Wald, wie lang schon hüte deinen Hort. Er lehrte mich spielen, und er zerschmelte, Künstler selber nicht kennt des Helix Mutes, muss das gelingen, wie es erschlagen, starre Stücke, weit zu schmieden, so spät. Des Vaters Heer, weg sie mir neu, Mannes, schuf sie mir Notung. Durch diesen Kampf, bringt es dem Zwerg, erfüllt mir uns um Fall. Dort fällt ihr, zu mir, bang und stottert, gestanden mir Böses. Blut und Schreck für die Schuld.
Was nicht kann gespielen, das schmeckt ja noch nie mehr.
Hält dir zu denken,
wüsst ich ihm noch das herrliche Weib, auf hohem Fenstern sich läuft, Feuer brennt jeden Saal, durchschießt ja die Brunst, weckt ja die Braut, in Hilde, wenn er was weint. Morgen des Bundes will ins Rappen, was schon den Tiger tot ich noch aus.
Nein, nein, nein, nein.
Thank you. Thank you. Ich
a world and a Royal Albert Hall transformed. The end of Wagner's Götterdämmerung and the end of the Ring cycle here at the BBC Proms. Daniel Barenboim conducted the Staatskapelle Berlin and the Royal Opera Chorus. He's, as we all are here, in a red glow, immolated by the power of the music he's just unleashed, but he turns to face this ovation from the Royal Albert Hall audience. The players of the Staatskapelle Berlin on their feet. The singers you heard in that performance, the Rhine Maidens were Aga Mikolai, Maria Gotsevskaya and Anna Lapkovskaya, at last reunited with their gold thanks to Brunhilde's immolating herself at the end of the ring. Gert Grachowski was Gunther, Mikhail Petrenko was Hagen, Gutruna was Anna Samuel, Andreas Schager sang Siegfried and Nina Stemmer was Brunhilde, appearing above the orchestra just behind the bust of Sir Henry Wood in front of the Royal Albert Hall organ. You know, the very last words of Wagner's Ring cycle belong to Hagen, the villain of the piece. Zurück vom Ring! Mikhail Petrenko came to the front of the stage and shouted, keep away from the ring. But right now, I think the Royal Albert Hall audience, and I'm sure you at home, would happily return to the ring, return right to the start of Das Rheingold, where we started on Monday night, and begin that whole extraordinary, transforming life and music changing journey again. The whole cast of Götterdämmerung coming on stage. All of the Rhine Maidens, all of the Norns, Waltraud Meyer, who sang the second Norn, and Waltrauter in the first act, and Nina Stemmer in the middle of the cast there. Johannes Martin Krenzler, who sang Alberic as well. Applause now for the Royal Opera Chorus, the men in the third act, but there were women too in the second act. Daniel Barenboim gestures again to his singers. The chorus master was Renato Belsadonna. You know, the power of that music in the last few minutes seemed to be the answer to whatever inexplicable conundrum the ring throws up. The experience of going through that music, hearing it here, hearing it at home, that is the real answer to whatever questions Wagner asks. Somehow they're in there in the power of that experience, whatever they may be. And perhaps also the solution was given in that silence that Daniel Barenboim, when it seemed almost as if like a black hole, the whole experience of the ring cycle was somehow distilled in that silence of our thoughts, our imaginations at the end of the ring cycle here at the Royal Albert Hall. Well, I'm pretty lost for words, but Sarah Moore Beach is with me. Sarah, you've been through this whole journey and some of the experience of the first hour. How are you? Can you speak about it now?
No, I can't. I can't find the words. That was absolutely extraordinary. At the risk of succumbing to superlatives, that was possibly the best experience musically of my entire life. It totally exhilarating and completely exhausting.
But, well, it's true. Life-changing for you then, Sarah. It's your greatest musical experience. I'm sure it is. You can see in the Proms, all the Proms we've been hearing of, all of these people who are experiencing the ring for the first time, I'm sure are feeling pretty well.
You can probably barely hear me over it. It's like, you know, 10 times a football stadium in here, but it is absolutely extraordinary. And that breath, that silence you were talking about at the end, when nobody dared move a muscle, I could barely breathe, you know. Absolutely extraordinary. And in those final moments, all those leitmotifs crowding in on each other, and everything suddenly seems to make sense.
Even if what it all means is answered only in the moment of that silence, and maybe impossible finally to put into words, even all the words we've been hearing over the last week of the ring cycle here at the Royal Albert Hall. Well, astonishingly, although that's the end of Wagner's Ring, the first complete performance of Wagner's Ring cycle in a single prom season, the Proms, of course, go on. Tomorrow night, you can hear the BBC National Orchestra of Wales under their chief conductor, Thomas Zundergaard, in Colin Matthews, Prokofiev and Shostakovich. But that, although it may be less than 24 hours away, seems like another world. But it will happen. The world will go on. Time now, though, to hand you back to Broadcasting House and Jonathan Swain.
Tom, thank you very much. Tom's service there at the Royal Albert Hall. Well, what indeed can you say? What an occasion it was. And if you do want to hear Goethe Demarag again, or last night's magnificent Tristan, for example, or the previous Ring operas, every prom's available to listen to again online via the Radio 3 website anytime you like for 7 days from the broadcast. So not long to go for Das Rheingold. And just a week to go before the next fix of Wagner from the proms. That's Tannhäuser, last night's superb Tristan. Robert Dean Smith is the errant knight of the title, with Donald Runicles conducting, and that's live from the Royal Albert Hall here on Radio 3, starting at 6 o'clock next Sunday evening. As for other proms, non-Wagner ones, well, Tom mentioned tomorrow night's, and we've one tomorrow afternoon as well, the next of the BBC Chamber Proms. Pianist Imogen Cooper, soprano Ruby Hughes, tenor James Gilchrist, and guitarist Christoph Denault, marking Benjamin Britten's centenary in a sequence of song cycles and miniatures, including a charm of lullabies and the canticles My Beloved Is Mine and Abraham and Isaac. That's tomorrow lunchtime here on Radio 3, live from London's Cadogan Hall just after the 1 o'clock news. And the live music making continues tonight in just over a quarter of an hour with the last of the weekend's visits to WOMAD 2013, the leading festival of world music. And it comes live from the festival site in Charlton Park in Wiltshire tonight. Sets from a Georgian choir, Scotland's Red Hot Chili Peppers, and a good many other acts at the top of their game. That's all from 10:30 tonight. For the moment, French music, a caprice on Danish and Russian airs by Saint-Saëns. It's from 1887. He'd just agreed to conduct some concerts in Russia in the company of a flautist, oboist and a clarinetist. And he wrote this caprice to show off his skills as a pianist alongside theirs. The players here, Catherine Quentin, flute, Maurice Bourg, oboe, Michel Portal, clarinet, and the pianist is Pascal Roger. Thank you.
Thank you.
Caprice on Danish and Russian airs by Saint-Saëns. The players there, Catherine Quentin, flute, Maurice Bourg, oboe, Michel Portal, clarinet, and the pianist Pascal Roger. Well, staying in France, this is an arrangement of the first of Ravel's Stéphane Mallarmé songs, Soupir, Sigh, comparing the face of the beloved to the world of nature.
Thank you.
first of Ravel's Stéphane Mallarmé songs, Soupir, Sigh, arranged for choir by Clitus Gottwald and sung there by the Accentus Chamber Choir, conducted by Laurence Equilbé.
Well, hello there, lovely listener. D-Love here again, back to share the love for digital radio on BBC Radio 3. Tell me, can you think of anything better than listening to your favorite music on the radio? I can. Listening to your favorite music online in glorious HD sound. That's right. You could listen to the proms online, giving your favorite music the HD treatment it deserves. Do the right thing. Share the love.
If you love radio, go digital. To listen to the proms live in HD sound, visit the BBC Radio 3 website and click on Listen Live.
This is BBC Radio 3, it's 10:30, and now for the final time this weekend, we'll rejoin the Radio 3 team live at this year's WOMAD Festival of World Music. So, over now to Fiona Talkington.
Jonathan, thank you. You know you would love it here. It's beautiful. There are musical riches, there's variety and surprises, and even though the sun is setting on another WOMAD at Charlton Park, there's still live music we'll be bringing you during tonight's programme. A few highlights first. Here's music recorded on the Radio 3 stage earlier on this evening. It's a nine-piece band, a Ghanaian UK band called Konkoma, who are looking back on Ghanaian tradition and celebrating its future.
This is called Shibashayi. Woza Shibashayi Ngoma.
Thank you.
Nine-piece UK Ghanaian band Konkamar are recorded on the Radio 3 stage here at WOMAD at Charlton Park in Wiltshire just a couple of hours ago. Well, as I said, we've got live music during tonight's programme. I'll be going over live to a couple of stages to join both Lucy Duran and Marianne Kennedy. And I'll be chatting to them and to Lopa Kotari later on, looking back over a really fantastic weekend here at WOMAD. Lots of photos on the website, by the way, if you get a chance to have a look. Now, the sun shone here in Wiltshire with Lucy Duran introducing World Roots at lunchtime, and that included the Brighton-born Turkish Cypriot Doğan Mehmet. Here's a track called Domates Biber Patican. It means tomatoes, peppers and aubergine, and it's a love song based in a market.
Keşke her şeyimi sana açıkça anlatabilseydim. Sana deli gibi aşık olduğumu söyleyebilseydim. Göz göze geldiğimiz bu anda sanki dilim tutuldu bir anda. Konuşamadım karşında. Oysa bütün cesaremi toplayıp sana gelmiştim. Senin için şu çarpan şu kalbimi gör istemiştim. Tam elini tutmak üzereyken aşkımı itiraf edecekken sokaktan gele bu sesle yıkıldı dünya. Ne yana baksam hep seni görüyorum. Biliyorum artık çok geç ama yine de bekliyorum. Seni bir daha görsem yeter. İnan ki bu bir ömre bedel. Yeter ki yıkılmasın bir daha dünya. Story of one man's unrequited love. I'm sung for too long. This song needed piping up, but it was rejection that he was frightened of. So for 16 years he kept his lips tight shut. As soon as time was up, yeah, he could feel in his bones. Guys would eye her up, many kisses she would get blown. He
knew it wouldn't do for him to leave her alone. He had to have faith and make his leap for the throne. In the sunshine at lunchtime, down the marketplace, he approached her slowly with that calm face. It was next to the vegetable store, they were together, and all he knew was if she slew him, his heart would break. Yeah, tomorrow. So as his lips part to pour out his heart comes to cry, tomatoes, peppers, aubergines. Ere kitsem ne yana baksam hep seni görüyorum. Bin gün gün dönersin diye dualar ediyorum. Her şey hoş geliyor bana. Sanılacağım mesut sıkı sana. Yeter ki yıkılmasın bir daha dünya. Sokakla yankılandı domates, biber, patlıcan. Domates, biber, patlıcan. Domates, biber, patlıcan. Bir anda bütün dünya karanlığı. Bu sesle sokakla yankılandı domates, biber.
Doan Mehmet and Boombox Caravan, recorded on the Radio 3 stage this lunchtime. Domates, biber, patijan, tomatoes, peppers and aubergines. Fiona Talkington with you, live from WOMAD at Charlton Park. We've got live music coming up at around 11 o'clock here on Radio 3. Later on, he'll be talking to Sam Lee about trees, songs and spiders. You can find clips and pictures on the Radio 3 website, and do tweet us at BBC Radio 3, hashtag WOMAD 2013. Now, I want to play something from Lucas Santana's set. Lopa Katari was there. And Lopa, I wondered if someone's coming to his music for the very first time, maybe you can set some background.
Yeah, certainly. Well, Fiona, what I would like to say is that what's great is in the lead up to the World Cup next year, which happens in Brazil. It's nice to know that the brilliant Brazilians have been in town here at WOMAD. Of course, we've had Gilberto Gil headlining this evening. We had DJ Tudo, É Sua Gente do Lugar, his band from all over the place, playing yesterday. And, of course, Lucas Santana. Now, no disrespect to samba and bossa nova, but, you know, Brazil has so much more music in its treasure chest. And Lucas is one of this new wave, this new generation of musicians coming out with a new take on what music is in Brazil. And he brought out this album called Sem Nostalgia. And it was one of the most critically acclaimed albums of that year. And that's no mean feat in a country which lives, breathes and sleeps music. And to tell you about where his music comes from, I mean, Sem Nostalgia means without or no nostalgia. And so although his sound is kind of based on the romanticism of 1950s bossa nova, that sort of airy a la João Gilberto sound, it's definitely 21st century. He is a bit of a gadget kid. he's got this thing for gizmos and electronics, and he's got this box of buttons that he calls, and I think if I've got it right, it's called a monome, something he's made up, I don't know. And he trips all these sort of sounds and samples off while he's playing. And it just has all these wonderful sort of simple melodies, lovely little grooves, and then these layers upon layers of textures that gradually build up into a beautiful soundscape. Now, I think the song that we're going to hear is actually the single that he brought out ahead of that award-winning album. And I think it's a great example of what Lucas and new popular Brazilian music is all about. And it's called Who Can Say Which Way?
Thank you.
machine.